Hey guys, it's Scott Brennan from the Verbal Shenanigans Show, and you probably know that because you're just about to listen to our latest episode of this podcast. It's a good one, if I don't say so myself. Oh, good. But I am so happy to bring to you our latest sponsor, and that is Demented Brewing Company, based out of Middlesex, New Jersey. Brand new up-and-coming brewery, and I cannot be happier to work with them. Those of you who know me know how much I love craft beer, the taste of it, creating it, enjoying it with friends. Be sure to go to Demented Brewery in Middlesex, New Jersey. They make a variety of seasonal, inspired, insanely flavorful ales. Definitely visit their 16 taps tasting room. 16 taps, people. They even have soda for those of you who do not like to partake in the beer. Okay, so 16 different taps going at all different times. Also, while you're there, please check out their new barrel program. Make sure to get details about the Mug Club. They took us on a tour, gave us all showed us all the different barrel age things that are coming out. Very exciting. There's a new beer release on most Sundays, so be sure to check out their website at dementedbrewing.com for details. Again, that is dementedbrewing.com. Could not be happier to work with the brewery, and hopefully we're going to build a nice, strong relationship here, and we'll do lots more with them. All right. Another sponsor, our oldest sponsor, and just getting stronger. Now, a lot of brands pop up here and there, and shirt companies, but we think Wolf Nation is special, okay? It's coming on from the ground up, okay? It's owner Richie told us about how wolfing it, okay, in his neighborhood was just about you're growing a beard, you're wolfing it, you're going on the grind, you're afraid, you're done with the corporate man bringing you down all the time. And that's exactly what Wolf Nation is. Whatever your passion is, follow it, okay? Wolf Nation represents that. So is the brand itself. It's an entrepreneur. It's time to support it. So go to Wolf Nation at Instagram, on Twitter, okay, on Facebook, wolfnation.com. Check out the newest designs. A lot of news coming out of that camp. So be sure to check them out and show them some support. Finally. I got two more to go here. If you like independent film, opportunity to support one of our biggest fans and supporters and just a really good filmmaker, go to ConTruthMovie.com. ContruthMovie, a convenient truth, a mockumentary, a satire, whatever you like to call it. But for right now, if you enter the promo code Shenanigan at ContruthMovie.com, you get 50% off, $6.49 for a deluxe edition of the movie, and you're supporting some local film, okay? Independent film, okay? Finally, one of our other favorite sponsors on this podcast, Trivia Revolution. Now, I work for Trivia Revolution on Tuesday nights at Clark Paragon Tap and Table, but they are popping up absolutely everywhere, okay? Everywhere you look, he's got a new account going, and they're doing really well. And the best part, going along with Demented Brewery, is that Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that combines craft beer and trivia together, okay, fueled by craft beer. Each week, win a gift certificate to a different brewery, whether it's Demented Brewery, whether it's Beach House, whether it's Cricket Hill, okay, all different New Jersey craft beers, okay? So if you're that know-it-all of your friends, you got nothing to do on a certain weeknight and whatnot, why not get out there, win cash prizes, win brewery prizes, and go have some fun, play some trivia, okay? Trivia Revolution, check them out on Instagram and Twitter. And look for the bonus item. If you're an NJ Craft Beer member, get extra points. And that's about it. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Enjoy this week's podcast. This week on the podcast, we have from Ink Master, Clean Rock One. Listen to him as he tattoos while getting interviewed. And Warren Bobrow from a book called Cannabis Cocktails coming up. So please enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Michelangelo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle here, to let you know that you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Oh, that's like, because they're shenanigan-y and they're verbal.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Right. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Jubilee Hour of changing it up, changing the format.
Oh, I've never been a part of a Jubilee before.
Yeah, it's a Jubilee variety show. We are now a variety show. Which sometimes
kind of like the Brady Bunch Hour.
Which sometimes I think with this show we kind of are a variety show.
Yeah.
Because every week it's
something different.
Something kind of ridiculously different. Like this week's going to be pretty different.
Yeah, I would say the two guests have varied backgrounds.
Yeah, we got two guests on tonight, and this is also kind of like a bonus episode because we had certain things come across. We had one night, we had three guests on. We recorded interviews, kind of spliced them together. So this is for you, people. This is for you. We have to give you these interviews.
Yeah, those other episodes, those are ours. Don't you listen. This one, that's for you.
Yeah.
You cherish this one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't.
So, so welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, show, Jubilee, comedy hour, variety show.
I'm juggling right now.
Documentary, interview, panel segment. But I'm happy to be back. I'm always happy to be back.
Of course.
One day we'll be doing this full time, and people will be even more sick of us as we come to you on the daily. But I guess podcast happenings. You know what's funny? I wanted to talk about podcasts real quick.
All right.
You like how my podcast of the week segment went?
Yeah.
That's been going good. Mm-hmm. I think I did it one time somewhere like...
You do it once, drop the mic, I'm retired.
But I always find it funny that like people online and people in general be like, oh, everyone has a podcast. You know, blah, 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 blah. Ooh, a podcast. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think everyone should.
Let's rationalize it. I mean, you look at like cable nowadays, there's about 300, 400 channels out there, and it seems like everybody has a show.
Not to mention YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's complaining about those. I mean, there are some where you sit back and go, ugh.
But that's exactly, well, that's, but that, yeah, people can say that about our show. Yeah, that's fine.
Each is their own taste, and we're giving you a little bit something different.
I guarantee everyone, most people are probably at home right now going, ugh. Well, can you skip to the next podcast? I want to hear Joe Rogan. you know, but why wouldn't you want room? Like, in any other medium, like, there's a bazillion musicians. Mm-hmm. No one's like, oh, man, you picked up guitar today? Like, ugh, good luck. Or actors, or like singers, right? No one ever complains there's too many singers out there.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this guy, Burlow, trying to sing.
Why is it different
with comedy or podcasting? I don't know. It's a weird, like, ego thing, I think.
I guess it's one of those, it's kind of like the genre came in and it slowly grew and then it exploded. And that's generally when people start, you know, doing the whole, ooh, I look down upon that. Because everybody's having a, wow, this is a new medium and I want to try it.
Right. Go ahead. Go have a podcast. Make it your own. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's something forever. It's free. People should be doing it. It's a way to voice yourself. You can do whatever you want. You can literally have a podcast, Burlow, which maybe you want to do a side project where you just talk about the Dukes of Hazzard every single week. You do an episode by episode review of Dukes of Hazzard.
How many can I do in a week? I might be able to do the entire.
How many seasons of Dukes were there?
If I recall, there were 5.
Okay, how many episodes in a season? About
20.
Okay. There's 100 episodes right there for you.
All right.
You could last, if you did one a week, you're at 2 years of broadcasting right there.
Ooh.
Just leave the show now.
But you love me so
much. What's sad is I guarantee if you really niched that down and did that, you would have more listens than we do because there's a niche.
You'd be begging me, Burlew, can I co-host the news of Hazard? Nah, man, I'm sorry, man. I got Luke Duke here, man. We're just chilling, talking about old times.
The Dukes of Banter podcast. There it is, man.
That was a good episode. Very underrated. Go check it out right now. We'll finish this one and then go check it out.
Right. But, I don't understand the hatred. I don't know. I feel like sometimes, maybe not so much with podcasting, because I don't know a ton of podcasters. I know people do it. But comedy, I know a ton of comedians, and sometimes I think comedy is like, or like getting into comedy is like For some people, it's like being in high school again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they try to form these little cliques and who they can't do niche. That. Who's do that? They did that. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh my God, we're group, performing for 50 people. Enough. We were just at the same open mic. Shut up. You know, like, I don't know.
You get in your niches. You start talking about the other groups. And, oh, I exactly. love them. They think they're so
How did they
funny.
Do that show? Oh, he's using my guy. Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, slept with blah, blah. That's why. Yep. And, that guy does all the open mics, and he brings in the equipment for the other guy.
Yeah, that's right. He got that job. Mm-hmm. Oh, he works at that place. Blah, 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 blah. He does bring her. Okay, whatever. But Shenanigans Showdown's going down.
Yeah.
For the people who don't know, the Shenanigans Showdown is a year-long competition, which we've been a little slow on lately. You're ahead. I've been very slow on.
It's 25 to 10 right now.
But I have...
I know you got some plans.
I got some things on. I got some things in the back pocket that are coming.
Yeah, you've been teasing me on some stuff where I got sitting back going, all right, I got to up my game probably sometime soon.
Yeah, I've been teasing some things. It just has the time. It's been a little busy. It's been a little busy for me. Now I got some ideas. But, bro, my 50-pointer, well, anyway, for people who are just tuning in, it's a year-long competition where we challenge each other to do certain things. There's 5, 10, 50, 20-point questions. Not questions. Things to do. And guests that we could try to get on a 150-point act.
Ultra
act. And if we do them, we get the points. The winner takes the loser out to medieval times and dinner.
And
brings them back. And drinks and brings them back. Okay. Long story short. So Berlo is up 25 to 10. Mm-hmm. He's performed three different tasks. Yeah, three.
Yeah, mustache, selfie with a deer, and pixie stick up the nose.
Yes. So he is up, and I have only done the LARPing, which you may, if you want to listen to it, go ahead back. It's a funny episode.
Again, finish this one, then go back.
Yes, yes. But, Berlo, my 50-point challenge is I am was challenged to marry somebody.
Correct.
Now, I don't have any I'm not going to drop a bomb on the audience like, oh, I'm marrying someone next week.
My parents divorced just so I can remarry them. Come on, Mom.
But, Berlo, you are looking across at an American marriage minister.
Mm.
I'm showing you the book as we speak. And if you look in my left hand, Berlo, it says official ministerial document enclosed.
They don't put that sticker on any document.
Berlo, would you read this to the audience, please?
American marriage ministers, hereby it is certified that upon the recommendation of the church board, we recognize Scott Brennan as a duly ordained minister of American Marriage Ministries. We grant the full authority to perform all duties within the tenets of the church. This ordination is affirmed as of December 2nd, 2015, in the Register of American Marriage Ministries. And it's signed by the chief officer and president.
Okay. What about the on the left there? You see a nice what? Nice seal.
There's a nice little golden seal.
Golden
here.
Seal. Okay.
Unfortunately, you got two copies because I was going to rip this up to win the race.
Sony, stop. Eat it.
Wow, you want that, huh?
So, Berlo, we live in an amazing world where for $35, you can get yourself certified to marry someone. Mm. Okay, so we are, I wouldn't say we're halfway there, we're maybe a quarter of the way there.
The first steps are completed.
So, to whom it may concern, this letter has been issued to formulate now, and Scott Brennan is a duly ordained minister of the American Marriage Ministry. We hold the ordination of Scott Brennan to be in good standing and in the register of the American Marriage Ministries and grant him the authority to perform marriage rites and other religious services. Scott Brennan comes before you as a recommended representative of our spiritual community. Berlo, just so you can see, there is another seal there.
Oh, man.
And if there's a gold seal, that means it must be 100% official and signed by Trigvi Jones, notary, a public notary.
Trigvi. Son of a bitch.
So
he told me he wasn't going to help you out.
If there's anyone listening out there, anyone, and you know a couple that maybe they don't want to do the whole big marriage thing. They just want to go down to the The, what's this called where you could just you just go elope, you just go get it signed, you know, at the courthouse. If you need someone to be there, I'm your man. If you want to do like a little ceremony and you don't want to do the religious route, I'm your guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I am putting myself out there, Scott Brennan, His Holiness Scott Brennan. I'm here for you guys.
Yeah. Also, for those same people, if you're in the mood for Girl Scout cookies, I could really use the 50 points back.
I have a Boy Scout uniform in this house.
Really?
Yes. So if you're nice
well,
to me.
I got to lose weight to get into it.
But, Berlo, before we get to our guests, I have the minister's manual here, so I thought maybe why don't we read a little bit from the minister's manual.
Let's ministrate.
You know what, like, in the very early episodes, I had this, like, sex book that we used to read pages from.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do it the same way, the minister's manual. Berlo, pick a page.
I am going to do page 22.
Of course, you just pick a chart with states on it.
Wow, Alabama. All
right.
Six. Let's go to the front.
Okay. Page six.
Welcome to. It's the blank
page. Page six. I swear I'll take pictures of this and then put them on the site. Page six is blank.
Let me just grab one.
Thank you for ruining the bit, Mike Berlo.
There.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know what? I'm just going to go to somewhere that's good. Where I have to read something. That just.
This is a great bit, by the way.
That was just terrible. Okay. So, if I was to marry someone, okay, Berlo, if we were going to declare our intent to each other
as
a couple.
All right.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to practice. You know, every good minister needs a little practice.
You should.
All right. So, let's say you and Obi
like an open mic. You can't have notes up there.
Let's say you and Obi are to be wed. Okay. All right.
You want to get married, Obi?
Yes, I do.
So, declaration, do you take? This should be part of the ceremony that you perform. It is a technical requirement in some states. It just makes sense to have a couple publicly express their intent to marry. Okay. All right. Michael Burlum, do you take this here, Obi? Let's see. Oh, see, this isn't giving me the exact script. But, okay. So, to ask the couple if they will have each other in marriage. You take Obi here. They will have each to be married. Do you want to be married to the goddamn dog?
I do.
Okay. Obi, you take this creep here to marry yourself.
He's not a creep, Daddy. Yes, I do.
Okay. With this ring, I the wed. Okay, it's got all different things in here.
Go back to page six.
Page six, brutal. I was trying to get you to pick the part where there's like a script to read, but I don't know. That's okay.
Here are 100 pages. I picked the two worst pages in the book.
Here are some key facts about my ordination, if you want to know that. Your ordination allows you to perform services throughout the United States and in many countries around the world. So I'm not just limited people. I'm not just limited to the U.S. Fly me out. I'm your guy. Okay.
You could go down to Las Vegas where they have those drive-through chapels.
You're thinking now. You're thinking.
Yeah. Why did I tell you that?
Okay. Your ordination does not expire, and neither do the documents that we issue. It does not expire.
Wow. You don't have to pay like a yearly fee?
No.
That's cool.
Good to go. There are no initiation fees and no renewal fees to maintain your ordination.
Wow. So you can marry people forever.
Yep. Using the AMM website to share pictures, readings, and ceremony scripts is encouraged and a great way to get work in the ministry, Berlo. So, His Holiness Scott Brennan is here for you. In the name of the Father and the Son and
Scott, forgive me for I've sinned. You know why you were asking me about that tapping noise from my trunk?
Yep. Berlo, I'm not a priest. I can just marry people. Can't absolve you from your sins.
Then that was a joke.
But let's get to the guests.
All right.
Okay. So we got two guests coming up, okay? And we're going to kind of roll right into each other. Yeah. Okay. So first we have Warren Bobrow, okay, or Bobrow, or Bobrow. He's got a very difficult last name.
Yeah.
Okay. But Warren Bobrow, Bobrow. Okay. But he is a
Rocky Balboa.
He's a chef. He's a mixologist. But he's got a couple books coming out. Well, he has a book, main book coming out. He's written books. But now he's got one called Cannabis Cocktails, making cocktails with cannabis. Okay. So he'll be coming up. And then right after that is Ink Master is coming up again soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And a guy that came very close to winning Clean Rock One, who you're going to actually hear being interviewed while tattooing.
Tattooing, yeah.
He was, you know, interesting guy. He had work, and he said, okay, I'll interview you. And he put his iPad on the back of the chair, and we have a picture we could post online and interviewed us. So
yeah, the tattoo came out pretty well. I saw that online.
Yep. Here is Warren, and after that will be Clean Rock One.
Here we go. Now I know where to go when after work.
We get to try this again?
I think we are back. Do you hear us okay?
I hear you great.
Oh, awesome.
All right. So we'll take the blow in the and go on to the phone here. So at least we get to talk. That's all that matters.
That's right.
We'll take the blunt of the blame.
Yes. So first off, thanks for joining the show. We talked for about 35 seconds, and it was a great 35 seconds. But
amazing.
We were saying, what's with you, you food guys, you food and drink guys? We talked to Russell Davis, massive technical problems.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Duffy, massive technical problems.
Mm-hmm.
And now you.
Massive technical problems.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's good. But, you know, this phone is voiced over IP, so it should be good.
Beautiful. So, Warren, we were just saying beforehand. First off, you said you're back in Morristown, which is cool. So you're really only about 25 minutes away from us right now.
Really? Where are you located?
Right now we're in Woodbridge.
Woodbridge. I've been there once or twice, certainly.
Yeah. And then before that, I was in Rockaway.
Oh, very good. Well, I'm burning a smoke signal right now. I'm blowing the smoke out the window.
Well, I work out in Morristown, so I'll follow that damn direction.
Yeah. So, Warren, you are not only you are a mixologist, you're a chef, you're a writer, you're an author, you got all sorts of books coming out, a book coming out, and you got a lot of interesting things going on. So,
thank you.
Where's your, where was your roots? Like, what is your roots to getting into all this stuff?
My roots was as a classically trained chef. And it wasn't that long ago. It was like 1985. I graduated from college at Emerson. I didn't know what the heck I wanted to be. I'd worked in television on and off for about 10 years because it was in my family, motion pictures, stuff like that. But I really wasn't able to find a great full-time job doing what I was really trained to do. And being that I was fortunate to come up in a family that did a lot of traveling to Europe, I always took very close attention to how someone became a chef. Don't become a chef by going to culinary school and graduating and saying, I'm a chef. What I found that it was much better to do was to start by washing dishes and doing pots and pans. So I got a job up in York Harbor, Maine. I was living up there anyway. I'd met a girl that I really liked, and we were living together. And I was working like one or two weekends a month in television in New York City, making enough basically for like the entire month. But I needed something to keep my mind occupied. So I went up to the York Harbor Inn. I knocked at the chef's door, and I said, do you need any help? And he said, well, you know, my pot scrubbers quit yesterday, and I really need help doing that job. Are you interested? And I said, absolutely. He said, what's your experience in the kitchen? And I said, absolutely none. I wanted to become a chef. And I figured the only way to become a chef is by starting at the bottom and
going up. Yeah, it's funny. I have your Wikipedia page printed out, and the best sentence on it is, he worked as a dishwasher at York Main Harbor and as an engineer at WNET-TV.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. My stepdad was chief of engineering, and he was the worst boss I've ever had. It put me on the night shift. I was working from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. doing overnight editing, videotape editing. It was about the driest job that you can imagine. My union, it was a union job. My mandated lunch break, when you had to leave the building, was from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. Now, keep in mind, this is like 1984, 1985. There wasn't a whole lot going on in New York City uptown at that time. Everything was downtown. So from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m., I worked at Danceteria.
Nice.
It was a great job to have. At least I knew I wasn't getting in too much trouble, and there was a finite amount of drinking that I could do between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.
So was there a reason you were going for chef? Like, was there something that inspired you?
To become a cook or become a chef? I've always been passionate about food, and I've always been passionate about drink, and really at the high end of the experience as opposed to the speed rack end of the experience. So as I said, I grew up partially in Europe, so I was looking at things from a 30,000-foot level, and it was a very nice level to look at because everything was the best. So that was my upbringing, and I understand what it means to work with people or work around people where you've taken money out of the equation and you want to just experience the very best that life has to offer.
And how long did you get to have that lovely mind-numbing job before you got to where you wanted to be?
Oh, my God. I worked in the corporate world for 20 years.
I'm sneaking up on it myself, so I shouldn't be really surprised.
Oh, my God. I did it to please my dad. Come on. I mean, I was a failure. I just lost my dad recently, and right up to the day that he died, I was a failure. So, I think at some point in your life, and, I'm 54 years old, I had to say, I'm tired of trying to make other people happy. I've got to make myself happy. They're not going to live forever, and I'm not going to live forever. But if I don't make myself happy now, I messed up.
Oh, you can curse. Nobody. Yeah. So, look at it this way. Someone's looking down right now saying, wow, look where he's made it. He's on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
I'm proud of you, son. As a tear comes down his eye and his halo come up.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm the luckiest man in the world because I've been able to follow my dreams.
That's it.
I lost my corporate job in 2009, and I haven't had a day off since 2009, but yet I haven't worked a day since 2009.
That's great. So let's talk about post-2009, okay? So what did you do?
Well, the first thing I did is I contacted my former boss's wife, who was the founder of the Wild River Review in Princeton, New Jersey. And she's Joyce Stockey, the toughest editor I've ever had. There was no favoritism shown to me at all. She said, so you want to be a writer? And I said, yes. She said, well, write something for me. And then she critiqued it. And the things that she said were not easy to hear, but she did say that I had some talent, but I really need to refine my talent. So she suggested that I go back to school for food writing. And brought in my wife into that conversation, and they all agreed I should go back to school and see what I wanted to be and see what I wanted to do and try to get some professional assistance. And I took Andy Smith's class at the New School, and he said I'd be a fool to go into banking. Then I took Alan Richmond's class at French Culinary Institute, and he said I made the right decision by not going back into banking. So, it's not easy. I mean, for 2 years, I worked for free. I mean, no one would pay an untested author, and people still ask me to work for free. And I'm like, excuse me? My mortgage company didn't say that, oh, it's okay, you have a job and you don't get paid, that's all right, we'll just, forget about you paying the mortgage, it's all right.
It's funny.
They don't look at things that way, they foreclosed on my house. It's easy as that. I couldn't pay the mortgage, please. For 2 years I worked for free to establish myself.
It's funny, I teach during the day and everyone's like, oh, great job, summer's off. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of great,
yeah,
but
right.
The mortgage bill, the mortgage doesn't go away for 2 months. It's not like, I'm on the beach.
Hey, bank, that 3 months, that's my time.
Yeah, that's my time, not your time.
I know. It's so profound in a lot of ways that I'm just very lucky. I just say I'm very lucky, and I've met incredible people along the way, and I've met some real animals along the way, but I have a back like a duck, and everything slides right off of me, and I'm really, really lucky in the fact that, I cut my expenses, and I was able to really look at my life and say, I'm going to be successful because of me, not because someone else tells me what to do.
So let's talk a little bit about the success. So you write books, but you're also we kind of jumped a part of your life here because a lot of your books are on mixology and things like that. So where did you start getting into that and actually making that something you could profit from or be able to talk about?
You know, I've just always had a real comfort level with spirits and especially with wine. After plundering my family's wine cellar, which was probably $1 million wine cellar, I really had a lot of understanding about what nice things were. And, you know, and it was a real wake-up call to realize that I wasn't going to be able to afford it myself from what I earned. So I had to figure it out right quick, what kind of writing was going to make me money. And I worked in food writing and wine writing, but that was nothing. It was nowhere's land. You have to be a wealthy man to write about those things. You know, you don't see any poor wine writers. They just don't exist. I mean, you have to be a wealthy, wealthy person to be able to afford to support yourself on that type of thing. Because they pay $50 an article. I mean, who can live on that? You can't. But cocktail writing, on the other hand, I can make a living. I don't make a great living, but I can pay my bills, and at least I know doing a good job and be able to live a life I want to live as opposed to one that someone wants to live for me. And that's really profound. I mean, I had people, you know, important publishers say cocktail writing is dead. What are you doing cocktail writing? And I've written 4 books since then. So
I just want to go on the record. My books about box wines, me being a poor person, were phenomenal. I don't know why they're not published yet, but I'll tell you when they get out there.
I can tell you that there's 1 million people in the world who want to read what you have to write.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm telling you, there's a total niche and genre of that, and they would love to have some writing that didn't treat them like idiots for wanting to have.
The problem is he wrote it on the box and threw it out each time.
You could write it on the can too.
Yeah, those are my short stories.
Well, you know, there's not much to them. Some of them are pretty one dimensional.
I'll never forget one party I went to in I think it was college, and there was a box of wine. And, of course, like a bunch of idiots, we take the bladder out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, instead of doing, like, funnels, would have to put their mouth on the end of the bladder of the wine thing. And then, like, everyone's buddy would be slapping the bladder. So you'd be like, slap it!
That's like the punches I used to make when I lived up in Boston, up on Beacon Hill. And we had a chimney right in the middle of the roof deck. So I put 2 big black plastic bags in the chimney, not knowing that it was working or not working. It didn't matter. It was a chimney punch. And people would drink out of this thing.
Chimney punch.
Who knows what kind of things were leaching into the punch.
Is that your next book, garbage. Chimney Punch? Not a bad book. Not a bad book.
Mm.
So where did you – but, like, yeah, you say, oh, yeah, I always liked spirits and whatnot. When did you figure out that you were actually kind of good at this?
I had a dream.
Yes, Martin.
I'm serious. I had a dream. I dreamt this all. This was it sounds so way out and metaphysical, but, no, it's absolutely so. I had a dream, and I looked at the quality of the writing that was out there. I said it was good, but I could do better. And I felt that, you know, I was as good as the best, and why can't I be the best, too? I certainly have as much education as anyone else. I spent most of my life in school.
Yeah, I think my question is more like, when did you know you were good at, like, mixing drinks or knowing about drinks? Like, what?
Oh, that's a really good question. It would probably be about 2010, and it dated back to times that I spent down in the Caribbean on my family's sailboat, and I met Ed Hamilton. It was about 1982, 1983, and he became fast friends with my stepfather. No one ever became friends with my stepfather. He hated everyone equally. But he really liked Ed, and Ed asked me to be a Ministry of Rum judge. So immediately I took the leap from wine to spirits right then and there. And why did I figure out that I had a passion for cocktails? It just came to me. I mean, I'm classically trained as a sommelier. I understand food. I understand wine. I understand flavors. Hmm. What's so difficult about spirits? I mean, it's everything that I know. It's everything that I've been trained. It's everything that I, you know, when you're working behind the dish sink and 18 drinks come in, you don't think I didn't taste them? Of course I did.
Now, getting a little deeper into when you realize you were a little different than the rest. What kind of pitfalls did you see, like, looking at other people making like cocktail books? Is it just like the generic, oh, it's expensive, it's good, or?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. What I wanted to focus on immediately was craft spirits. So I wasn't looking at anything outside the craft spirits world. And the writing that's going on in the craft spirits world is very high quality. These are people who are very passionate. They fit a certain demeanor. They're very similar to myself. You know, they're interested in handcrafted. They're interested in small producer. They're interested in privately owned companies, not owned by huge conglomerates. I owned my own company. I know what it's like to go in and start a business from scratch and fail in business, as I did. And so I have a great appreciation for small business, and I have many stories to tell and many things to, you know, much wisdom to impart, especially right. about starting and failing in business. And that's something no one would ever admit to. They would never admit to, you know, oh, I started my own business, I was successful. Well, no, 90% of the people who start their own businesses fail. That's a fact. So, you know, I have a lot to impart with that, and that's why I am the man that I am today, because I failed.
Well, I mean, a lot of people we talk to on this show, whether they're musicians or artists, a lot of times it's almost more interesting to hear about their failures than their successes, mm-hmm. you know, like, because it does maybe like send them one way or another, or make them rethink or work harder, whatever it is, you know, like we had a guy named David Ippolito on the show, and he's a folk singer. And he started playing. He was basically broke, you know, couldn't pay his rent and stuff. So he just went down to Central Park one day and started playing songs. And, you know, before you knew it, he had an audience of 100 and 200 and 300. So he decided to start going every single week. And he had concerts of like 1,000, 2,000 people, like for free in the park. And, you know, like now he makes his music, his living off of music. So. And he said, if you know, if he was never fail, like where he was a drug addict at the time, and it was basically that decision to go down and do it one day. Now he's putting shows on in the city, and you know, making a living doing what he wants. It's just really interesting, you know.
You have to find the very, very bottom place in life, wherever it is. It may some IT. People are
Step
afflicted
one,
by bad health. Some people are. Lose all their money. Some people lose their family. Some people lose their minds.
Got that.
We all find our way in different ways. And unfortunately or fortunately for me, I was given the opportunity of having the gift of gab. I could talk to anyone. I'll speak to anyone. I was over in Russia for the Moscow Bar Show. You don't think I didn't talk to everyone. I talked to every single person in the room.
None of them understood English, but still.
No,
they're like, that guy's
English.
Wasted.
No, everyone speaks English. They don't learn French in school. They don't learn Chinese in school. They learn English. And all their cocktails, at least at the Moscow Bar Show, were all classic Jerry Thomas renditions that were perfectly done to a T using all American liquors. It, you know, we talk here about a bourbon shortage. Where's all the bourbon? Well, guess what? All the bourbons in Moscow. They love American bourbon. Everything American.
Really?
There's a Ralph Lauren on every two blocks. There's a Dunkin' Donuts on every corner.
Thank God.
There's Starbucks every place in between. There's 3 Lamborghini dealerships downtown Moscow. There's no lack of money. It's the wealthiest city in the world, probably. And they like the very best. And what they really like to drink is bourbon. So guess what's there? All the bourbon that's not here.
Well, now, Warren... You, you know, being surrounded by alcohol, working with alcohol, writing about alcohol, I asked Russell Davis the other day.
Yeah.
Is it hard to not get sucked up into it, to become like, you know, because, you know, part of it is tasting it and being around the culture of it. Is it hard? Mm-hmm. Like, of course you're going to have nights that go, you have crazy nights and whatnot, but
This is a misnomer of our industry. You don't have to get trashed to be successful in this business. Mm. And I use as my guide. My guide is Ann Tinerman of Tales of the Cocktail. Whenever I'm in New Orleans, she's watching me. And I act as if I'm being watched the entire time. I know I'm being watched. I'm being evaluated. They're watching. It's just absolutely essential not to get trashed. You don't do it. You don't get asked back. I get a press pass that's worth a lot of money.
Right.
I don't mess around. And I'm dead serious about what I do. You know, as I said, when Tales of the Cocktail comes around this year in July, I'll be 55 years old. I'll be a senior citizen. I mean, think about it. And I know I look like I'm 30 years old, but really, chronologically, I'm an old man. And I look at it and I say, I'm not going to screw this up like I've screwed everything up in my life. So if it means not getting trashed and it means putting out a happy face, and, you know, if everyone else is getting trashed around me, that's okay. They can do it. I can't.
Yeah.
Because I'm being held to a higher standard.
I guess my point was more, is it hard to be like, you know, obviously you're doing it for a living, but is it hard to is it hard to avoid all of that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we teach responsible drinking. No liquor company in the world would say that they're in business to get people drunk. What they're in business to do is teach responsible drinking. If they don't agree with it, that's their problem. But I wouldn't say that, you know, every single big company, they all need to have responsible drinking. Otherwise, you know, people are just going to be wasted all the time. That's just no place to be. I mean, it's not good for us. It's just not good. I mean, we can drink, you can have a good time, you can carry on, but you can't do it every single night. Not every night is New Year's Eve.
Now, when
you know, there's enough liquor to go around.
When you're, you know, coming up with stuff for your book and reviewing drinks, what's like the hot thing right now? Is it a certain alcohol? Is it a certain flavor?
Yeah.
Is it the presentation?
Authenticity, nostalgia. We're interested in historic drinks. We love Amaro. We love, you know, apples. Apples are going to be so hot. I mean, we love these German hard ciders that are, you know, they don't add any caramel coloring, no sugar. You know, we love things like that. We love an authentic story about rum that's made without caramel coloring and added sugar. We love to, you know, to drink whiskey that they don't add caramel coloring to. We love things that are made by hand. We're really in, you know, at least in my part of the industry, we love vermouth. We love not have, you know, to be able to have a drink in our hand and not say that it's, you know, cask strength, even though we love cask strength. But it's nice to be able to drink a glass of vermouth and with a lemon zest and not appear like we're going to get completely wasted, you know, if we have two. I mean, I like nothing more than to have a tea punch, which is the classic rum agar cold drink. But, you know, I'm not going to have five of them. I'm going to have two, maybe have three. But it's still 100 proof, so I'm not messing around with those, especially in the hot sun. You know, you learn your lessons. And I just don't like the way alcohol makes me feel when I get drunk. I don't like the spins. I don't like, you know, throwing up. I don't like any of that stuff. I've done it too many times. It doesn't behoove me. So there are other things I like to do, and I'm sure you know what they are because I just wrote a whole book on them.
Yes. And
that's the direction we're going.
That is pretty much
I'd much rather smoke a joint than drink any day. Come on.
That is where we have arrived. Tell us about...
We have arrived. This is what I've done since I was 13. My grandfather was in the movie business. One of the subsidiaries was Arista Records. They recorded The Grateful Dead. I saw 300 shows. Come on. We weren't just drinking water. You know, there might have been something in that water. I don't know. But I'll tell you, you know, I had to get to a certain point in my life to be able to be responsible enough to put on that face that says that I can smoke pot every single day and you would never know it. You wouldn't know it. I don't look like a stoner. I don't act like a stoner. It just happens to be one of the things that I enjoy doing. I'd much rather do it than go and drink. It's just the bottom line.
So
society's changed, though.
Oh, yeah. Let's throw it out there. What, you have a book called Cannabis Cocktails coming out, correct?
That's right. It's the first book on the topic.
So you got to give us a little background and tell us what the book's about and bring us into your world here.
I'm gonna bring you into my world. When I was in eighth grade, I was in a rock and roll band. And we were playing at a local...
What was your band's name?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Oh, come on. You want to know my ninth grade band's name?
Something, I don't know.
Ninth grade band, we were called Not Quite Banana.
Not Quite Banana. That sounds very Iggy Pop of you.
It was terrible, but yeah.
But it doesn't matter. You were out there, you know?
That's it.
But so someone gave me a brownie, and I ate this brownie, and this brownie made my jaw numb. And I didn't know what it was, even though I'd been, you know, my
walnuts?
Uncle put me to, it wasn't, it was hash brown. It was serious hash brown. My whole face was numb. It felt like it was melting. And, you know, I've taken enough psychedelics to know that I know what that feels like. This was beyond that. This was incredible. And I met the person who knew how to make the butter. And this was kind of like, I don't know, eighth grade, ninth grade, who knows what it was. I was young. And he taught me how to make canna butter. And so in my book is my recipe, my historic recipe, that dates back to, gosh, I was probably 13 years old. And I was making incredible canna butter at home in my parents' Frank Lloyd Wright house in Morristown. You know, what's that smell? Oh, don't worry. You know,
oregano.
It must be the horses, you know, something like that. Something floating up in the stable. But so I have these great recipes, and I play around with them for food, but I never played around with them for liquor. And I knew that being, you know, the cocktail whisperer, and I knew that I have a certain affinity for making drinks that just sort of, they're more culinary than anything. And then I have this ingredient, this THC thing, and all these different strains. I have 75 different strains at my disposal, and I'm writing about them like someone writes about fine wine or writes about whiskey. And it makes you hungry, it makes you thirsty, and you want to have this drink, and you want to have something that really just gives you, you know, energy or brings you down or cures your stomach. Or like when you used to go to the apothecary, the early apothecary before Big Pharma ruined the party, and you'd say you're an apothecary and, listen, doc, you know, I'm having trouble sleeping. Do you have anything for me? And they would give you some type of tea, and it might have lavender, and it might have some chamomile, and it might have some turmeric, and it might have some nutmeg. But really, the only thing that really did anything was the cannabis tincture, the THC tincture that they put in. And the doctor would say, you know, you got to take 3 drops of this every 4 hours and come back to see me tomorrow for a refill. And it wasn't cheap. It was expensive. So my grandfather, who was in the movie business, before he was in the movie business, he was in the pharmaceutical business. And his most famous product was no more than whiskey. In fact, it was better ingredients than whiskey. It was ethyl alcohol, caramel coloring, and flavorings. It was sold in every single pharmacy in America. In fact, it was probably in most everyone's medicine chest in America. And the product did absolutely nothing at all. It was for something that no one had. It's called Iron Poor Blood. No one had it. But yet they sold it to everyone. And it made him a really wealthy guy. And the product was called Geritol. And if Geritol didn't interest me to writing apothecary cocktails, you have no idea what, I mean, that's what it was. That was my influence right there. So when I wrote cannabis cocktails, I built on the history that I set down in apothecary cocktails and added that missing ingredient, which was THC.
Now, how
and it's all active. It's all active. It's not the passive stuff. This is the stuff that gets you stoned.
Gotcha. Now, how do you balance when you're creating a cocktail, kind of the buzz versus the high? Do they blend well, or do you need to kind of...
Oh, they play beautifully together. It's a symphony. And everyone's freaked out about it. They're saying, oh, if you drink too much, oh, you know. No, not at all. They play beautifully together. But if you should somehow take too much and have more than one drink an hour, I gave the cure. And the cure from my friend Jerry Whiting, who's LeBlanc CBC, you know, LeBlanc out in Seattle. He said, drink some fresh lemon juice, freshly squeezed lemon juice, and chew down 3 peppercorns. They have the same terpenes that you do in cannabis, and it counteracts the negatives.
Wait, positive. Hold on.
And you come off of it right away.
Hold on.
So if you ever get the spins, I'm telling you, I'm giving
you the cure. But my question is, how did he find this out? Like,
well, he knows. He's a man.
He was high. He grabbed everything in the house.
That's what I mean.
The only combination that worked.
Like, that is a lot of experimentation to come down to lemon juice and peppercorn.
I'm in 4 encyclopedias. Come on, guys. You know, we're not messing around here. I mean, I have serious research behind me.
So when is your book? You know? It sounds fascinating. When does your book drop?
It drops in June.
Okay, so we got a little while before.
Yeah. It's in pre-sale now on Amazon. And let me tell you, I am being, as I said, I'm being held to a much higher standard than anyone else. So if I do well in pre-sale, I might be able to afford to pay my rent for another couple months.
Woo.
So really, at the end of the day, I would love everyone to go to Amazon and take a look at cannabis cocktails and place a pre-order. You won't get charged until the book drops, so you don't have to worry about putting money up front. But really, at the end of the day, you're helping someone continue in his dream. And that's what it is. If I don't ask, I'm not going to get. So I have to ask. I say, please. That's what I say.
Yeah. And obviously, once you get the book, you have to move to Colorado or Washington where it's legal.
No, I was actually thinking Massachusetts or Maine. I think those states are gonna go a little sooner than
Maine,
than
probably.
We might
yes,
think.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We gotta wait till Christy goes for Jersey. He's very hyper.
Yeah,
about
he's you know, living here in Morris County. I'll tell you.
Don't get me started, Warren.
You know, bad
don't
thing.
Get me started on this man.
I could because I
don't.
Grew up around him.
Please don't
I
do
went
it.
Morris Town Baird. He went to Livingston High.
Yep.
We played each other in sports. He was there. I remember him. He wasn't nice then. He's not nice now.
Wait. He was able to play sports with that body?
He was slender then. But he hung
Goldberg,
out with
the goalie!
Something happened. I think his mom fattened him up for Thanksgiving.
And then his dad. And then his grandma.
And now New Jersey.
I didn't know him personally. I knew the people who he hung around with, and I was the kid that they got beaten up every day after school, either mentally or physically. I was terribly bullied growing up, and his buddies terribly bullied me.
Yep, so, and that's what he tries to do.
I don't have anything nice to say about him. What's that?
And that's what he tries to do now.
Well, that's what he does now in the public arena, and I look at it, and it really makes me very sad because it's obvious that he never learned anything growing up.
I 100% agree with you. I will bring you on a different time in the future. We can talk about that for sure. Warren, so if people want to go check you out and say hello and say, hey, I heard you on this amazing podcast or whatnot, and they're interested in the book or they just want to communicate with you, where can they go?
They can follow me on Twitter, and it's not just a follow. I say thank you to everyone who e-meets me on Twitter, and it's at Warren Bobrow with a number one. Someone stole my name on Twitter, and I wasn't happy about it.
Bastards.
So I had to put a number one there. They can connect with me on Facebook. They can look at my Instagram, which is my name, Warren Bobrow, without the number one. They can get in touch with my gnome, Klaus, and that's at Klaus Gnome, KlausGnome.
Wow.
Yes, I have a gnome. Yeah. He's very well traveled. He came to Russia. He's been to Italy. He's been to France. He's been every place. He
wait,
goes
wait,
every
wait.
Place I got.
You can't just drop a gnome bomb on us and be like, goodbye, guys. What the? I'm sorry. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I have a gnome. He's the key to my success. He's my wingman.
And I see how you come up with the cannabis cocktails. It's all the gnome.
Uh-huh. Oddly, the gnome was the one that whispered in his ear.
Well, he's made of terracotta, and he doesn't speak to anyone else.
Yeah, right.
I can tell you that there's never been a lonely night with him around.
wow.
He's from the 1860s. He's very handsome. And he's got a little red-pointed head.
I don't really know what to say to that, but other than that, Warren, you have been a fantastic interview, and I would love to bring you on closer to your book debut, maybe sometime in May.
I would love that. But what we should do is we should get together and partake in at least one or two of the recipes from the book.
Sounds
I'm down with that.
Awesome. So, Warren, thanks a lot for coming on, and we will
my pleasure.
Let you know when this is up. And thank you, brother.
My pleasure and my honor. Thanks for listening to me.
Bro, you're a big Vin Diesel fan, right?
I don't mind him. I won't say he's my fave, but...
Oh, he's your fave from what I heard, from what I read on your Wikipedia.
I have a Wikipedia?
That's a great idea. That's a really great idea that I wish I didn't say.
Scott, I was looking up Walking Dead, and there was this link. Also, my picture showed up.
Man, that is another thing I would like to promote coming up. Look for the Michael Berlow Wikipedia page that someone might put up. So, Vin Diesel, the reason I bring him up... there's a video that surfaced from 1994.
Really?
Vin Diesel was selling street sharks at a toy fair. Street sharks are they're kind of like toys that were like kind of like Ninja Turtles, but they were like street sharks.
I somewhat remember the cartoons.
Yeah. The video, hilarious. You can come on over here. Yeah, we're going to watch it and comment every once in a while. But basically, it's a very... very young-looking Vin Diesel, very buff as always,
with a shark tooth necklace.
Shark
it looks
tooth.
Like.
So now he. Oh, hold on. So he is selling Street Sharks. So let's take a listen here.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
What are we looking at here?
We're looking at Boomer. This is Boomer. He's got the biggest mouth of them all. He's the whale shark. Say hello to that round mound of pound and his power slam. Very deadly.
Now, Vin Diesel is playing with a street shark, which is like a buff shark figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's beating up Ninja Turtles with him, or trolls or something. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to sell the product.
Yeah.
He loves to tenderize the competition before he eats them. Then we've got Sledge the Hammer.
Now, he just took Sledge out of a shark's mouth.
Yeah.
Or he keeps the street sharks.
He keeps the street sharks in a shark.
Hammerhead. Sledge the Hammerhead loves to floor the competition with the flying headbutt.
Oh.
You got me?
All right.
Now, go ahead.
What basically happened was there is a button for this shark, and it shoots out its eyeballs at its competition, if you will, and knocks out the little toy man that was
in front of
him.
It was like a G.I. Joe or something.
Yeah.
So
they're pretty badass so far.
Vin Diesel's selling it good.
Yeah.
The leader of the street sharks. He's a great warrior. He's got the feels real shark skin, and his special power is the right hand roundhouse punch. He sends a competition to a watery grave.
Oh, wow. That was some action there.
Now, he just took one of the sharks. One of the sharks has like a spring-loaded arm.
A rotating body, yeah.
And showed us how he punishes people, and he got very excited. He said, boom, when he hit the gnome of some sort. Now, if you're Vin Diesel, you have two ways of going about this. You could be like, oh, God, be like, if I were him, I would embrace this.
I think he's somewhat into it right now.
No, I mean now. Like, this footage found is... I would embrace it, be like, Street Sharks, like, hashtag Street Sharks, like, bring everything back. I would do a modern video of it. Like, him beating up modern toys. Street Sharks.
Fast and Furious 8.
Yeah.
Doug Walker's gone. Street Sharks are
Street Sharks still hold it down. They can beat down Dora the Explorer. Boom! Doc McStuffins. Boom!
We got one more job. What we gotta do? We gotta sell Street Sharks.
So this here comes my favorite part.
Death. I want to show you something up close and personal. I've got something here with such fantastic detail. It's gonna
fantastic.
Head shark. I'm going to chase. Rocky Balboa action.
Now, he just had a shark puppet, hand shark. Hand shark! That's going to be one of our like sound bites all the time. Hand shark!
Maybe for your puppet show, I'll say Vin Diesel.
Well, maybe I could be a hand shark at least. That'd be cool. You could find one. I'm sure you could find one on eBay.
I'm sure you can.
So Vin Diesel, by the way, he's not only in a shark tooth, he's just in a leather vest, a zipper up vest and nothing else. And he just described hand shark and put it into the camera. It was growling, and it's just, it's brilliant. I like Vin Diesel now.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. Then right now, I want him to stop saying, I am Groot. I want him to say, I am Street Shark.
Street hand shark. I gotta hear that again.
Hand shark.
I gotta hear that again. Here we go.
Shark.
Oh, 1 second.
Damn it.
Shark.
Ah.
You wait.
All right. Tell us.
Hand shark.
So please go look up a Lost Toy Fair performance with Vin Diesel, 1994.
There's some people with gay porn are more prouder than that video.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect.
All right, awesome. So, first off, Clean Rock One, welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Show after our maybe like half hour of attempts to try to figure out what the hell kind of connection problems we were going on. But thanks for popping on for a few minutes.
Hey, no problem, man.
This has to be a first. You are actually doing your job while talking to us.
Yeah, I tattooed from noon till 4 a.m. yesterday. Today I got here at noon, and I'll be tattooing probably till, I don't know, at least midnight tonight.
Really? So a nice 12-hour tattoo shift?
Man, I wish I had a 9-to-5 sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I could show up to work, punch a fucking clock, and go home. But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when you're an artist, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I fucking show up and I don't even feel motivated to draw the tattoos that I'm supposed to do that day.
Right.
So then that makes it, like, even harder to, like, get in the mood. And sometimes all it takes is, like, you know, a couple fucking dirty pics on Instagram or something. And then you're like, yeah, all right, cool.
Yeah, vagina motivates me to podcast, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and then you just, you know, the next thing you know, you're like, all right, cool, let's rock this out, you know?
So, like, first off, like, if you look at your Twitter, you have a pretty sweet motto. It says, live for the day, built not bought, bulldogs and big tits, hot rods, choppers, tattoos, and chill.
Yeah.
Is that in the order of priority, or should we rearrange
Yeah,
that?
What's the top priority out of those? The bulldogs, the tattoos, or choppers?
Top priority in my life. Like, if you ask me today, is paying my child support tomorrow because it's late.
I see, like, why you're tattooing till midnight tonight.
Yeah, I'm a hustler, man. Like the TV thing has been really cool, and it's made me an internet celebrity,
right?
And a household celebrity,
right?
But other than that, man, there's really no difference. I'm not making any more money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not out here, like, charging people, like, more money than I did before I got on TV.
Right.
And then even if I did, I mean, Megan Jean Morris, you know, she's another tattooer. She's my kind of my honey right now. She's always like, you need to charge more. Like, she's always getting on my case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't need to charge more. I need to work more.
Yeah. Now, first off, where does Clean Rock One come from? Where does that name come from?
I did graffiti, man.
Wow.
I'm a vandal.
Nice. So that was your graffiti, your tag name, or?
Yeah. I used to be a pretty heavy writer back in the day, and once I started tattooing, I kind of stopped all that because one, I wasn't about to go steal a couple $100 worth of paint every other day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seemed like everybody that found out that I was a graffiti kid tattooing, they always wanted me to tattoo their style on them. And I hated it. I'm like, dude, this guy's style is black as fuck. He wants me to fucking go ahead and fucking, he wants me to go ahead and tattoo his style on his back. And I'm like, God, I don't want to do everybody else's style. I want to do my own style. So I kind of, and on top of that, none of them had any money. You know what I mean? So these graffiti kids, they got any fucking money. So I'm like, fuck it, man. I'm going to focus on tattooing fucking, you know, wolves and dream catchers and tribal and, you know, stuff on dudes that had jobs, you know, construction workers and shit, you know, and it was definitely the furthest thing from graffiti, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's it, you know, the whole graffiti thing, I still love graffiti. I'm not out fucking up people's shit anymore, you know? I caught a case back in the 90s, which almost sent me to fucking jail and stuff, you know?
Now, are you from Vegas, or did you just end up in Vegas?
No, I'm from Chicago. I'm from the suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when's the first tattoo you put on somebody?
First tattoo ever was on my friend Sarah Heberstitch. I was in high school.
High school.
And
nice.
I built some tattoo machine or whatever the fuck it was, a little walkie guy. But I'm a builder, man. I build a lot of shit. So at the time, I was building lowrider bikes, you know, like show-style lowrider bikes.
Yeah.
And
So I made this thing in shop class, and it looked like something that you'd buy in the fucking store, you know? So I did this little daisy on her, and I was like, holy shit, it fucking worked, you know? And then after that, dude, it was fucking no holds barred, dude. I was tattooing fucking big gang signs on fucking his kid's chest and shit. I didn't give a fuck, man. I was doing big old fucking crowns and fucking pitchfork. I was tattooing both gangs, dude. I was tattooing kids from both sides of the fence. I didn't give a fuck. My dad would come in my room, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I just traded a cell phone, a case of gloves, and some Preparation H for this tattoo. What do you mean? he's like, you can't be putting gang signs on kids. And I'm like, man, I mean, I was a kid too. I was 18 years old. I didn't give a fuck, man.
So you were self-taught? So you were mostly self-taught?
Well, I tattooed out of my house. Well, here's the thing. I was trying to get an apprenticeship, trying to get my foot in the door for years, man. And it, you know, and now I get it every day. I get fucking every kid and their mother coming in. I want to be a tattooer. And so I'm like going into tattoo shops, and back then it was fucking hard, man. I remember going into a couple tattoo shops, and the dude's like, oh yeah, do I learn how to tattoo? He's like, you got 3 seconds to get the fuck out of here before I beat your fucking face. And I'm like,
nice.
He's like, 1, 2, and I'm like, these guys had a reputation of throwing dudes down the stairs.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Everybody knew about it, you know. Everybody's like, oh man, they broke this dude's neck and they're getting sued, you know. They threw some guy down the stairs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, they were fucking rough times back in the 90s.
That's even a pretty badass reputation.
So you're saying I shouldn't go to them for my unicorn tattoo?
Well, you're going in there and basically what you're doing is saying, hey, I want to be a part of your food chain. You know what I mean? And
right.
That wasn't it. Like, no, I make all the money. You can fuck off. So it was tough, you know. I had a guy stick some dogs on me.
Jesus.
You know, luckily I got out of the shop before they actually fucking got me, but I was like, Jesus Christ, you know. That's how it was back then, you know.
He was just asking to use the bathroom too at the time. It's weird.
So what are you currently tattooing right now? We tried to Skype, something was going on with our connection, and
I'm actually in the middle of I'm working on a sleeve that I've been working on. This girl that I'm tattooing, I did both of her knees, from her knees to her toes, some really awesome, kind of Native American new school stuff that I do.
Nice.
And then I'm doing a sleeve right now that actually is all 90s cartoon characters.
Oh, sweet.
Like, who are you on right now? What character?
I'm actually doing all the background.
Oh.
I'm just kind of smoothing everything out, but I'm right next to her. What's this dude's name? What's the beaver? What's his name? Angry Beaver.
Oh, yeah, Angry Beaver. Wow.
Yeah.
I got the Angry Beaver. I got the Rugrat. I got the fucking
Doug.
Tail.
Is Doug in there?
Is Doug on here? No Doug, right?
What?
No. There's a Dexter. There's a teddy bear guy.
Can you tell her?
How about Beavis and Butthead?
How about he asked? How about Beavis and Butthead?
No Beavis and Butthead.
Can you ask her to put Doug in there as Quail Man? Say I would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We got throw Doug in here.
Yeah, as Quail Man.
Yeah, his alter
Quail
ego.
Man. Who's Doug?
You don't remember?
Doug was
the nerdy guy who, like, his best friend was Porkchop, the dog. You know, I kind of related to that guy.
Skeeter.
Yeah, I remember.
Listen, I know they don't know us, but can you just tell them these podcasters just want to add on to your tattoo, just go with it?
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's forever, but still.
Now, Clean, you say you have a case of ADD, but yet you're able to tattoo while you're talking to us. Is that hard?
Well, that's just normal, man. Like, I get my socializing at work, you know? I tattoo all day and bullshit, and the shop's real loud, and I'm always talking and screaming and yelling.
Yeah, I mean,
fucking singing, having a good time.
When we Skyped you, I heard Notorious B.I.G. in the background. I was pretty happy, and a lot of machines going off, a lot of commotion. I liked it.
Yeah.
So So when did this Ink Master thing present itself to you?
That was last summer. You know, they basically Tim, my rival, he used to work at the shop, and he was like, I don't know, he worked at the shop, and I fired him, I guess. He wasn't that great. I totally forgot about it. They hit me up, and they were like, hey, this guy Tim wants to call you out. And I'm like, who? He's working in the shop. And I'm like, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about, man. And they're like, oh, well, he says he's fucking going to clean your fucking ass on TV. And I'm like, what? I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? And then all of a sudden, I was like, this motherfucker, fuck that. So that's what I was like. Fucking bring it. I'm fucking there. So
was the whole Ink Master thing an enjoyable experience? Or because we talked to Aaron Is a couple weeks ago, and he said it was, you know, it's filled with pros and cons. He said it was a great.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He said, you know, you got a lot of camaraderie and, you know, things like that.
Aaron's awesome.
Yeah, Aaron was a great interview. Really cool guy.
Wow.
I feel like the machine is tattooing my ear.
Oh, sorry, dude.
Oh, no problem. Keep doing what you're doing.
Season 5 was definitely fun, and we all had kind of an understanding, and you know, everybody, we kind of knew we had to like hype it up for TV a little
bit,
you know.
Right, right.
And so that was, you know, that was cool. So like all the scenes were like me and Emily are fucking fighting with each other, going back and forth, you know, that's all bullshit. Yeah, Emily's super fucking awesome. She's super cool. Fucking, you know, Mark Longnecker, me and him are fucking homies. Everybody's super great.
Right.
The season 7 was definitely a lot more like serious.
Yeah,
and
you're going back on, or you already went back on.
We already filmed it.
It hasn't aired
yet. It airs March 1st.
Nice.
Okay. Can you tell us who won?
Nobody won. It's all live.
Oh,
that's
okay.
It's for real.
Ah.
Like you know, the finale, that's all live. It's pretty cool. You guys could probably get tickets if you wanted to go to the live finale.
That'd be great.
I'd be down with that.
Do it.
You just email Spike TV and tell me you want to be a part of the finale.
Awesome.
We'll say
actually,
we know you.
I'm sure. I don't check my email.
I'm just kidding.
So,
but no, for real. Email them and tell them, hey, you know, we do this thing with all the Ink Master guys, blah blah blah. They'd probably love to have you. They always take care of everybody.
Nice.
Like, you know that dude who's on Twitter who's always hot air high fiving everybody.
No.
No.
I don't even know his name, but he's like Ink Master crazy. Like,
no.
All you gotta do is it's just like. Every other day, the dude, he's air high-fiving everybody. He's always promoting Ink Master. Well, they actually flew him out to the finale and gave him a room and shit.
So. Wow.
He's like a huge promoter of the show. He just is a fan.
Well,
fucking love the show.
We'll give out the air low five, so we're the yang of his yang.
Yes.
So. Yeah, see?
Yes. Now, you got pretty, you, if I'm not mistaken, you got down to the bottom two, right, on the first time you won?
I took second in season 5, yeah.
Now, do you guys do okay financially on that, or is it more just
no,
being...
No, not at all.
Not at all.
It's terrible. It's a huge fucking... You better have some money stacked up, because you're getting paid $250 an episode.
Jeez.
And
wow.
You basically, you know, make fucking shit. So wow. A lot of guys, that was a huge stress for the guys on season 5, you know? You've got guys that... You know, they're living day to day, check to check, like most tattooers do, and they don't have a shop where guys are back home making the money.
Right.
Well, and how are they gonna pay their bills? $250 a fucking you know, a week isn't gonna fucking pay your fucking bills. Not when you're a tattooer, not when you're used to making fucking decent money.
Yeah. I mean that explains why there's so much reality TV nowadays. They can pay shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's the whole thing. It's like you know, you go on the show because you want the publicity. You
right.
want the, you know, and I definitely thought that, oh man, I'm gonna get on TV and I'm gonna fucking, as soon as I fucking get back home, I'm gonna sell fucking 1,000 t-shirts a day. You know, everybody's gonna be like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. No.
No. So,
Yes. It's definitely a financial, I mean, I'll go to tattoo conventions and I'm overwhelmed with tattoos that I normally would not do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like every housewife, and like soccer mom that like wouldn't normally get tattooed by me, now they want to get tattooed by me.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right.
So that's, I mean, it's cool in one sense that they want to get tattooed by me, and I take care of all my fans, and I'm like super humble and I'm super, I always take time to get pictures and sign autographs and do all that shit, you know, but, it seems like some of my normal clientele that would normally get like the neo-traditional hot rod stuff, they kind of took a back seat, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So I guess it is just loaded with pros and cons. But you're going, you went back on though. So you must have thought
Yeah, because they paid me a little bit more money.
All right. I see.
You know, I definitely went back on because I enjoy it. I think fucking, you know, my main goal is to get my own show.
Awesome.
That's what my main goal would be. So I don't want to say no and then ruin a chance to possibly get my own show, you know?
Yeah.
That's where the money's at, you know, not the competition shit. Which
right.
I hated,
right.
Anyhow.
Now,
like, I hated the whole, we got to fucking compete and, you know.
Yeah. Well, on a side note, what's funny is I have your Twitter page up, and on the side it says you may also like Justin Bieber.
Yeah, dude, that's a good song.
Just a weird.
Hey, don't hate the player, man.
Oh, I'm not.
That dude's probably banging more fucking chicks in a week than dudes do in a lifetime.
No, I'm actually not hating. I'm actually finding it funny that when I'm clicking on your page, it says you may also like Justin Bieber. So I guess you guys have some kind of, I don't know, thread somewhere. Now, you got a lot of things going on, right? You don't just tattoo, correct?
Oh, fuck no, man. I'm like jack of all trades. I build motorcycles, have a skateboard. You know, I'm always doing something. You know, tattooing is just how I pay my bills. So.
I mean, you got a lot of artist stuff and buildings. Has that always been in your blood? Have you always been like working
yeah,
with wood and all that
yeah,
fun
man.
Stuff?
You know, like when I, like right now, I'm using a tattoo machine that I built from scratch in my garage. You know, that's what I do. I build my own tools. I'm a fucking dude, man. You know, like I built a Model A car back a while back.
Wow.
And I drove it from Vegas to Chicago, first trip. I built it in 30 days by myself.
Nice.
And, you know, I look at it like if a kid back in the 50s could do it with fucking a hacksaw and a fucking torch, I could do it with fucking whatever, you know, my resources. So that's how I look at it, man. If another man can do it, I can totally do it.
Yeah, man. I mean, I see some of your stuff online. It looks pretty cool, man.
That's kind of my life motto, you know?
So you're into bulldogs.
No, oh, yeah, dude, I love them.
My bulldog, I have a half English bulldog, half beagle. They call him a beagle. And when
have you
I
ever heard of that? Half English bulldog, half beagle. You gotta.
Yeah, when we're done with this interview, I'll text you a couple pictures of them.
Yeah, my client has a bulldog too.
That's awesome.
Oh, nice.
So when'd you get into like the bull? How many do you own, or do you own a couple? Or
well, I got an English bulldog and a pit bull now, but. I got my first English bulldog back in '99.
Yeah,
and they're badass. Man.
They're the best,
they're fucking
man.
They're lovers.
Yeah, see, I originally went to get an English bulldog, and I was kind of hurting on funds, and you know, like I heard a lot about like health problems and whatnot.
Yeah, mine's actually got a swollen ass face today for some reason. I don't even know why.
Ugh. It's the worst. But so I looked into like mixed breeds. And this Beeble thing popped up, and I ended up flying him in from Missouri to Newark Airport in New Jersey, and I picked him up in like some weird cargo area, and we've been best buds ever since.
Oh, they're fucking! I'm looking at one right now. They're fucking cute.
They're awesome, right?
Yeah, super cute.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to. I'm gonna send you a couple pictures. I'm gonna send you a video you might want to watch. It's pretty funny. My dog is a strange dog, man. Does your dog sleep like the most ridiculous amount of hours known to man.
Yeah, mine do too.
Yeah.
Like, I got a pit bull and an English bulldog, and everybody's making fun of my pit bull lately because he's getting fat. But, man, that dog's getting fat. And I'm like, well, fuck, he's 5 years old, man. He's living life.
That's, yeah.
Ain't got to do shit.
Yeah, my dog's 4 years old, and you know what? Like, he gets on that couch, and he's spread out, gut hanging out, you know, like.
Oh, yeah.
Love in life. Love in life.
The fatter the dog, the more loved it is.
So do you have an English bulldog right now or no?
Yeah, oh yeah. His name's Stroker. He's actually that's what I was saying. I woke up today and his eye was all fucking swelled up.
Has he got that cherry eye thing going on or?
Nah, he probably had an allergic reaction or something. He probably pulled shit out the backyard. Or got bit by something. I got a half acre that fucking bullshit. They probably got him something. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll give him some Benadryl when I get home tonight.
Yeah.
Now, you live in the Las Vegas area?
Yeah, I live like 7 minutes from the airport. And I'm like right off of Las Vegas Boulevard. But I got a half acre. Like, all my neighbors have horse properties and stuff like that. So I live in an awesome area.
And what is the, like, the style out there? I mean, everybody's first thought is Las Vegas, partying every night, blah blah blah. Is there like a quiet life?
You don't do any of that. It's like when you live in fucking New York. How many times you go to the fucking the Statue of Liberty?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You went there once when you're in fourth grade on a fucking field trip.
So, you're putting in long hours there, just kind of living your life. What do you...
I just opened up my new shop right on Las Vegas Boulevard, Golden Skull Tattoo.
What is it called?
And,
sorry, you broke up there for
Golden
what?
Golden Skull Tattoo.
Awesome.
It's actually a little pun off of the show because I accumulated one of the skulls, so with my name on it, that was used in season 7.
Yeah, the skulls. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, you gotta get the skull pick and screw the next guy over.
I kind of
played off of that with the shop. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm super, like, you know, I'm a super humble guy, and I'm not really about I mean, if you look at any of my banners or any of my, any of my business cards or anything like that, none of them say, anything like that. You know, I'm not going to these shows trying to promote them. You know, they don't pay me to fuck shit.
Yeah. And,
so this, you know, my old shop, which I still own, Chrome Gypsy Tattoo, which is right on the corner, you know, that one, I mean, fuck, I owned that for 5 years, and there's no Plain Rock One from Ink Master shit anywhere on it, you know? It's like a regular old fucking tattoo shop. So, but this one I actually kind of sold out a little bit. I got the ad seen on TV and the fucking, you know, Clean Rock One from Ink Master. And I'm trying to fucking make some money.
Do you have, like, stick-on tattoos for kids that you've done and, like, a little snack bar with Clean Rock One, like, ice cream? Because other than that, you haven't sold out yet.
But that's hey, if somebody walked in the door and said, hey, we're going to make some money with this, I'm going to be like,
Do it.
I'm all for it, man.
Well, I think
I'm actually trying to get my own hair grease right now.
Wow.
Nice.
That one I didn't see coming.
No, I didn't see. Yeah, that one hit us from the left side.
I'm the greaser, man.
That's true.
Now, is it homemade like all the other stuff in your shop?
Nah, I'd fucking take some guys and slap a label on.
It's actually just recycled grease from his hair.
Yeah. It's actually all the old A&D that we just used on our tattoos.
Oh, nice. But I think, like you said, you know, humble. It's important to be humble because within God knows how many years, all this Ink Master stuff's going to be gone, and you're still going to have to make a living, and, you know, you still have to be authentic, you know, because once that's gone, you never know where you're going to be.
Yep, I'm right there, man. I say it all the time. I'm like, I'm gonna try and ride this out for a minute and make it, you know, as popular and as big as I can right now. Because, I mean, fuck, man, it might be gone by next summer.
Yeah.
I gotta ask, what is the dumbest tattoo request you ever got?
You know, and I don't,
I don't look at any tattoos being dumb ideas, because I could close my eyes and I'm still doing the same fucking thing that I would be doing if it was a cool image that I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. I'm poking you with a needle and put a picture on your fucking skin. And then I don't judge. You know, I would never judge, you know, anybody for whatever they want. Because,
right.
I mean, fuck, I got a broke dick tattooed on the back of my leg. You know what I mean? Like
a broke dick,
I'm a broke dick motherfucker. I got $10, dude, in my pocket, and I'm spending $100. So I just thought it was kind of funny and it fit. That's what I'm saying. Like, I could have, you know, a fucking older dude come in who's super into, you know, like, for instance, like, say he's into fucking some wildlife. I want to get an eagle portrait or something, you know, with the Mount Rushmore in the fucking background, you know? I would never be like, dude, that's the dumbest fucking idea I've ever fucking heard of. You should get some hot rod shit. you know, like the fucking red legs I got on my back with the fucking beaver coming out of it. You know what I mean? Like, cause that's what I'm into.
Yeah.
You know, I would never do that because, you know what? I'm going to treat him like he's the fucking last customer I'm ever going to tattoo, and I need his fucking money. So.
Yeah. So, Clean, before we go, do you, you know, after doing it for so long and seeing in and out of the business, the highs and lows, do you still love it when it comes down to it?
I say it all the time. If I win the lottery, I would do free tattoos.
That's awesome.
Like I would do free fucking tattoos, and you would basically get my 100% true art. Because I would show up and I'd say, well, this is what I feel like tattooing today. You know, because sometimes you come into work and you feel like tattooing skulls, or you're like, this thing is that you've been working on in your head, and you're like, oh, I really want to just fucking lay this down. And then, you know, shift it from your chair and wants a fucking butterfly. And you're like, okay, well, I really fucking want to do some fucking skulls today with some crossbones. I mean, you know,
That's awesome.
So as far as the art goes, you know, I'm an artist and I like to create, but sometimes tattooing, you know, and people ask me this all the time, they're like, oh man, it must be so awesome to be a tattooer because you get to like do your art. I'm like, well, I can't remember the last time somebody came in handing me a fucking $1,000 and said, do whatever the fuck you want. No, they fucking hand me $1,000 and they tell me what they want, and I fucking do the best I can to do it.
Right. In the end, it's still a job.
Yep.
And,
I mean, yeah, I get to do my own style and this and that. You know, sometimes I get to have a little bit of creativity and fun with it, but for the most part, you know, I'm trying to make clients 100% happy, you know? So.
That's awesome, man. So, first off, Clean, thank you so much for coming on. You know,
hey, no problem. I'm glad I caught up with you. You know, I people always think that I'm like they're bothering me and shit, but I'm just kidding, man. I'm not super techie either.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't bothering you, and like I kept saying, we'll get it done whenever. But it was really cool. Before you go, if people want to go check you out or say hi to you or shoot you a tweet or look at your work, where can they go?
Well, I'm on my Instagram pretty regularly. I'm on my Twitter page, but not super duper.
Right.
But I work at Golden Skull Tattoo in Las Vegas, and I'm here 5 days a week, pretty much from practically open to close. And we're right on the Las Vegas Strip. We're a block from the Stratosphere, and a block from SLS.
Awesome, man. So
you can go. I mean, you can go on the Instagram, CleanRock1, or you can go to my website, which hasn't been updated in a while, but it's CleanRock1. Everything's CleanRock1, dude.
Yep.
CleanRock1 Twitter, CleanRock1 Instagram. I don't have a Facebook, because these motherfuckers want me to use my real name on fucking Facebook.
Really? So you can't be like CleanRock1 public figure or something like that? Or
They want me to use my real name, and then I can open up a public figure account, but it's too confusing when people are coming in. Because I mean, my real name is James, so I've labeled myself as a brand for 20 years as Clean Rock One.
Yeah,
I can't fucking have people coming in going, you know, oh, hey, I want to get, you know, tattooed by Jade. It's like, well, he doesn't work here. They're like, oh,
yeah.
Well, aren't you him? And I'm like, no, my name is Clean. Oh, well, your name is James, though. And I'm like, too confusing. So,
yeah, that's pretty annoying.
Yeah, and that's how it was back in the early days. And that's why back in, like, 96, I, like, made it, like, 100% point that nobody fucking calls me James in the shop. Anybody that comes in wanting to get tattooed, you know, like, but I had a situation where I had two dudes at a bar, both talking about me. One guy saying, oh, you got to go check out my guy. His name's James. Another guy like, nah, you should check out my guy. His name's Clean. Next thing you know, I find out that these motherfuckers are both fucking talking about me.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's what set it off for. I'm like, nope.
Yep. And it annoyed me, and I threw him down the stairs.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I'll vouch for Clean. He was the first, when I was looking for a tattoo artist to get on the podcast, you responded to me within maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours of me just sending you a tweet. It was pretty awesome, and I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
I try to stay hip on that, you know what I mean? I know that social media is a fucking huge fucking game, and I know that everybody's like, yeah, dude, you got to stay on there. You know, I don't have fucking guys like sitting there running my Twitter like some of these guys that are on the show. They think they're fucking rock stars. They're like, I paid this guy $500 a month, and he does all my social media. He's great, dude. I'm like, so where do you see titties then? I'm pretty sure I go on my Twitter, and that's the only reason why I'm on Twitter most of the time, because it's fucking tits and fucking bitch getting plowed the fuck down.
Well, I'm sorry I couldn't provide you with tits, but it was a pretty damn cool interview, man, and I really appreciate it, especially, you know, while you're doing your job, too. I think it's really cool. So thanks.
Fine, get the Skype video up. I'll get mine now.
Yeah, well, we can show you Mike Berlow's tits over here, but I guarantee you'll fuck that tattoo up when you see him. thanks again, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
No problem, man.
And I'll send you pictures of my dog in a minute.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks so much, brother. And good luck with your dog and all the stuff. And good luck on the next season if you know, hopefully you advance.
Fuck yeah, man. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Today I'm, I was having like a kind of a day where you woke up grumpy and kind of pissed off at certain things and situations. And
I call it every day.
Yeah. Financial things and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the gym, and I'm on the treadmill, and I'm walking, running, stuff
I'm
like that.
Walking, yes, sirree, I'm
talking. I did an hour on the treadmill, and in front of me is a guy. I mean, it's a black guy, and I know I'm looking at his legs, and they're like they're very thin at the bottom, and I'm like,
all right,
So. You know, I got nothing else to do. I'm listening to a podcast in my ears and just kind of trying to burn some calories. And I look at him and I'm like, he's really like, he seems like he's struggling a little bit. And I look at his shirt and it says like basically initials and then something PT. So I put two and two together. It's physical therapy shirt. And I'm like, something's up with this guy. And he has like high socks on. And like his shorts are long, so every once in a while I would see like his calf. And okay. I'm like, wow, his calf looks really shiny. Like it's not the same color as the rest of him. And so he's working his ass off. He gets off the treadmill, he's sweating his ass off. And I'm like, And finally, I look at him. I realize the man has two artificial legs.
Wow.
From the knee down. And he's like on the treadmill killing it. And then I saw him go over to like the ab machine. So, you know, it was like one of those days where I'm like, well, you know, I don't have it that bad. You know, like I don't have it that bad. I I'm podcasting later and I'm, I'm broke. But it was really cool to see, I guess. Like, I don't know what happened, obviously, but the man looked pretty fit from like the waist up.
It would have been funny if you told him, like, oh, wow, you're an inspiration. He's like, shut up, loser. Get back on the treadmill, two legs.
Yeah, fatty.
Oh, man, I got to lose some weight myself. I'm up to 250, I saw.
250, huh?
Yeah.
I thought I put on, like, 3 to 5 pounds in the winter when I was, like, moving in here. And unpacking and not really having any kind of semblance in my life, and eating during the holidays and drinking during the holidays. So I've been back at it again. I feel pretty good. But yeah, I mean, like, I just don't want to ever get like where I, holy shit, I just put on a quick 25. Like, damn.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Where'd that come from? That's my concern. Like, most of my life, it's like I topped at best at like 240, but most of the part I lived my life 220, 230. And I don't know why, but like, I was showing around a coworker from Dalian, we had to stay up in the hotel just so I didn't have to do two trips up to PA. I was in the gym, and I'm like, all right, well, let's see how bad I am. And then I saw that 250. I'm, oh my goddamn lord, that is past beyond stuff. Plus, a week before, I tried to get blood, and they said my blood pressure was too high.
Oh boy,
so.
All right.
Some health stuff here.
So we got to get Berlo on the treadmill. No cannabis cocktails for you.
I mean, they say hard liquor is better than beer.
Yeah, but the cannabis might make you hungry.
Hmm. Decision. Well, if I'm freaking out, I don't want to eat.
Well, I think...
Maybe replace the cannabis with LSD.
Well, I think we're getting to the end here, Berlo.
Right.
I think we're getting to the end. So please keep following us on Twitter, on Instagram at Verbal Shenanigans. Look us up on Facebook, all that stuff. The best thing you can do for us is leave a review. Okay. And I guess that's about it for today. And I want to thank Warren real quick. And
great guest.
I will see you guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, 'cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.